Welcome to Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny, and I'm in the studio with Nancy Pardue of Cookeville, Tennessee. Originally not a Cookevillian, but an essential part of the community now in all the years you've been here. How long have you been here, and where did you come from originally?
I came from the tiniest little state, the state of Rhode Island. And it's kind of amazing because the original name for the state of Rhode Island is State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations, which makes it the longest name. But it's the smallest state. But the governor just took off Providence Plantation to be politically correct.
Right, yeah. I think we're all sort of assessing history again and seeing what we can do to address wounds, so to speak. But that is kind of amazing that it's got this long, long name attached to this tiny little thing that's not much bigger than an island, I think.
Actually, Rhode Island is 48 miles north to south, 36 miles east to west. So if you took Putnam County and you put it sideways, it's almost the size of Rhode Island.
No kidding. I never realized it was that small. And technically, is it an island? Is there a body of water that separates it from the continent?
Sir. No. Okay. Block Island, which used to be called Rhode Island, the island of Rhodes, is where Rhode Island got its name. But it's actually Block Island. And the main part of the land has a bay that comes right up into it, but it's all landlocked.
Gotcha, yeah. But it does feel like an island sometimes. It feels like a little island that got locked to the continent at some point. But
yes, sir.
Yeah, and you came to Cookeville when?
1986.
For some reason, I thought of you as being here much longer than that. I can't see Cookeville without you, so I just thought it was when I was a kid or something, but 86.
Yes, about 34, 35 years, something like that.
And you became fast friends, I think, with my Uncle Carol Warren and Aunt Jean Evelyn Warren, and that was a part of the affiliation through a club that we have here called the Bend of the River, mostly a shooting range, but also has archery and...
Well, it's a business.
Yeah.
Bend of the River is a business, and it started in 1971. And it started as a horse rink with 35 horses, and they did Tennessee Tech classes with riding. And then the horses really got a lot of expense to take care of them and everything, and they decided to change it over to a shooting range. And so we have pistol rifle shooting, we have archery shooting, skeet and trap shooting, and Charlie does the Tennessee State carry classes. So we have a lot of people that come through the business because of the carry classes, and he's got one Monday, but this will probably air after that. But you can call Bend of the River, and we also do a program for the BB gun kids. It's kids from 8 to 15 years old, and we've won the state championship many, many years. And we take them to Rogers, Arkansas for the national competition. And because of COVID, everything got eliminated this year.
Sure, yeah.
So we didn't do that this year.
You, like many people, are contending with how you're going to be structured in the present and in the future, and hopefully are coming up with some ideas that make it so that you're still very much relevant, because you have been relevant. It really crucial, I think, to this community. My earliest recall of being there was as a Cub Scout and going for a bow and arrow archery competition. Does that sound right, or am I imagining that?
Yes.
that's my memory, so tell me, help me with that one.
Many years ago, they did summer camp. So most of the people in Cookeville that are 50 and 60 years old went to Bend of the River for summer camp.
Yes.
And they did also environmental camp for the schools. Mary Jane was a PE teacher at Uffelman Elementary School in Monterey, and she brought her kids to Bend of the River, and they brought in the fire department and TWRA, and they had environmental camp there. And so that's been going on for many years.
I didn't remember that. Is that still in existence, the environmental camp there at the end of the river?
Yes and no.
Go ahead.
When Mary Jane retired, Connie Littlett, who took her place, came out and did the environmental camp. And then Christy did it. And then this year they didn't have it because of the COVID.
Right.
And the schools were out. And so, you know, I don't know whether... what's going to happen with them, whether it's going to continue or not.
I think a lot of us are just that's fine to be in that state, Ryan. I'm not sure what's going to happen, and that's the state of being that many of us are experiencing, and we just are seeing what the future is going to be like as it comes to us, I guess, in a way. But you've been doing a lot of things that help the community, and one of those that I've been quite in awe of is your mask making. So you've been a person that's been producing and selling masks of all types for quite some time now. An Elvis mask. I'm looking, listeners, at an Elvis Presley mask. This fabric is beautiful. How much does that cost?
$5.
Oh, my dad would love that. He's an Elvis fan.
Two for $8.
Are you selling that one here today,
yes,
by any chance?
Okay. Yes, I have.
Listeners, I'm going to get this Elvis mask, and if you want one, you'll have to get in touch and figure out how to get one yourself. So,
well, we had a small group of called the Masketeers.
The Masketeers.
We made over 3,000 masks that we gave away. Anybody that wanted them came and got them, and we had lots of our quilting fabrics, and we bought elastic and just made them and gave them away.
Are you still looking for more fabric? I think right now you're sort of at a standstill because retail has become very mainstream in selling these. But
yes, we've kind of gone out of business, but yeah. I do have them. I've made a Bend of the River mask.
I see that. That's great.
I've made a Upper Cumberland Quilt Festival mask. I make just regular fabric masks. And we've made some for the university for one of the departments.
Great.
And so if anybody wants them, they can contact me, and I've got some still.
I'm in the studio with Nancy Pardue, who I'm just for this moment calling the mask maker, and you're one of the masketeers, as you were saying. And a lot of people donated fabric to you, right? So there was sort of a coming together on everybody's part.
Oh, yes. I would get home, and at my door would be a bag of old sheets, cotton sheets. They were all lined with 100% cotton, and they're made with 100% cotton fabric. So, you know, people donated material to me.
The Bend of the River mask that she just showed me, its icon for years has been this possum that hangs from a tree with its tail wrapped around the branch a couple of times, right?
Yes.
I'm so glad that's never changed. I love that icon. It's far back as I can remember. That's what I always think of when I think of Bend of the River.
I think it was, oh my goodness, I can't remember his name because, of course, I wasn't there then. Somebody designed it.
Yeah.
And it's been the logo for Bend of the River.
It's great. It really is. You know, I think that there are so many things that go on at Bend of the River that speak to the organization itself and how you as a group come together. And one of those great things that people don't even know exist, I think, is a holiday called Boxing Day. And so the members of Bend of the River come together for Boxing Day. For listeners that don't know, tell us what Boxing Day actually is.
I think it's an English holiday, and it's the day after Christmas. And what you do is you box up your extra goodies and give them out to your servants or people you know.
I remember that. That was the origin, right? Yeah,
English. I think that's the correct
English
origin.
English lords giving gifts to their servants. And then it seems to me that it came by way of Canada, from what I can remember. That was the talk when I was a kid. It was this Canadian holiday, but I think research shows it goes much further back than that.
So. Well, Canada's English.
Yeah, exactly.
So we celebrate. We just do a lot of cooking and invite people to come. And it used to start at 10 o'clock and finish at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then it finished at 11, and then it finished at 8, and that tells the population age.
How many members do you think more or less have been to the river, would you say? And I guess some of them aren't always active, so there's not a way to determine exactly how many, but at least a few hundred, right?
Yes, we have a membership for $80, and if you do a membership, you get to come out and not pay for a range fee. Mm-hmm. That's what a membership at Bend of the River gives you. We're a public shooting range, so anybody can come and pay and while we're open. Charlie does teach Tennessee Tech classes, and not too many people know that, but Monday through Thursday, he has two classes every day, and one day he has three classes. So university students come out, and they learn archery, they learn handgun, they learn how to shoot the game, skeet, and trap. And so in the afternoons, the range is closed, but the store is open. And right now, it's hard to get ammunition, and it's difficult to get some things,
sure.
But we have everything except we don't sell guns. We just have supplies, black powder and cleaning supplies and reloading supplies.
And for a lot of people, I've discovered this. I never was a person that was never owned a gun, never been involved in shooting much, but I did shoot at a range near a home I have in New Jersey. And there are those that love it just for the accuracy and target. And you say trap and skeet shooting and aren't interested in hunting at all.
Right.
I feel like there's not really a division, but there's sort of there are people that are very much devoted to that.
Oh, yes. I did hold a national record for 1 month.
Oh.
Outdoor shooting as a team member. And then the next month, somebody else outshot us. So it's an NRA sport, you know, so people go to the Olympics shooting. So it's an important game.
Yes, I agree. I love the accuracy of it, being a sort of perfectionist in a weird way, you know. And I was terrible when I started getting anywhere near the center of the bullseye, but there's great satisfaction. And I've never had an interest in hunting either, but I do love that aspect of shooting, as I think a lot of people do. Yeah, I didn't realize that it was originally a horse rink, and that goes back 44 years ago. So again, it's been an essential part of this community for a long time now. And it's not directly in the town of Cookeville, but north in a community that is called...
Well, it's called Hardy's Chapel.
Hardy's Chapel.
So you go out Highway 136 and you keep going and you get into Overton County, then you go back into Putnam County, and then you go into Overton County again.
I didn't know that.
It's crazy the way the land configures. But it's on Highway 136, and next year will be 50 years that Bend of the River has been in existence.
50 years. Wow.
Yes.
You're going to have a big 50-year celebration, I hope.
I don't know.
All right.
We'll see.
Right. But you've been involved in that pretty much since you came to Cookeville, right?
Well, I'm married into the family, and so that's in part of the goes along with the family.
Right, yeah.
But when I came here, I talked to my friend this morning, and she was head of Girl Scouts, and I said, Rhonda, when did I start helping you with Girl Scouts? She said, well, you came here, and you moved here, and you came to my office, and you said, I'm from Rhode Island, and I used to do cookies, and could I help you? And she says, I thought I was going to fall off the chair. Nobody wants to take care of cookies. So I've worked with Girl Scouts, too, in Putnam County for several years.
You've been involved in so many different activities, and we'll talk about all of those when we get back from our break. Stay tuned.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm Louis Matheny, and in the studio with Nancy Pardue, who's an essential part of our community, and she might not like that praise, but it is accurate from my standpoint at least. And one of the things you've been essential to is scouting. You got involved in scouting when you first got to the area, and that's what you were starting to tell us about. Cookies.
Yes, I helped with Girl Scout cookies for several years, and then Rhonda said, you need to be more involved, you know. You could help with the service unit. So I was service unit chairman. I never was in charge with a troop, but all the leaders came to the meeting, and I coordinated all the meetings and the events that the Putnam County Girl Scouts were involved with.
That's wonderful. I mean, scouting is something that I've been in love with since I was a Cub Scout at a very small age and have great fond memories. As I said, I think that's what took me to Bend of the River originally, was something to do with scouting. And then you also have been for many years, your actual business, is curtain making.
Well,
Or one of your businesses, I guess we should say.
My mother in Rhode Island was Bernice Bergeron, and was one of the leading interior decorators in Rhode Island, and she had 19 people working for her. So for me to see my mother, I went to work. And it wasn't necessarily work, but I was there, and I learned how to sew. And then I went to Drexel University in Philadelphia and got my bachelor's degree in interior design. So I have a degree in interior design, but basically I liked sewing. So I worked in the sewing room also and learned how to make fancy swags and draperies and pillows and bedspreads and balloon curtains. And so when I came to Tennessee, I came with my 120-inch table and my lining and several sewing machines, and I've been sewing ever since in Putnam County.
I love the vision. I'm trying to sort of picture you with a table under one arm, but that's not realistic because that thing sounded really big. But you've been doing that for all the years you've been here, for the most part, which led naturally to you being a masketeer, as you say.
Well, I have a lot of material, so I can sew it.
Yeah.
But I really have a lot of cotton material because I've been helping with the Upper Cumberland Quilt Festival.
I was going to ask you about your quilting. That's an amazing thing that you do, I think.
Well, I'm not really a quilter. I'm an embroiderer.
Embroiderer.
But that leads to quilting because with the Embroiderers Guild, you can do needlework, needlepoint, which is traditionally done with wool, but now it's done with pearl cottons and fancy threads. Or you can do silk and metal stitching. You can do quilting. You can do French hand sewing. You can get a master's degree in color. There's all different varieties of combinations of things you can do with the Embroiderers Guild. It's anything through the eye of a needle. So as long as you can thread something, it's part of the Embroiderers Guild.
I love hearing you say that you're talking about an actual exercise in a craft that involves the hands and not something related to technology. And that's the part that I think is amazing. I think I love technology. I love some of what it does for us. Very often I find myself at a battle with technology like a lot of people. But you're actually keeping what could have become a lost art alive, and it'll never be a lost art as long as there are people like you that keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I'm not the only person. In Putnam County, we have the Irish chapter of the Embroiderers Guild. And every year we have done a big tree at First Tennessee Bank. And for the last several years, we've done a tree at the History Museum. And this year, it's going to be Christmas trees.
And Nancy is holding up something beautiful in the studio here, which is a stocking.
Right. And I said Christmas trees, but I meant Christmas stockings.
Stockings, right.
So you can, any kind of stocking. So this was just some white material that somebody gave me, and I just got out my threads, and I stitched on it and then did a buttonhole stitch around, so it's a shape of a stocking. But
I love you say that you just did that. I mean, I don't know that I could even thread a needle if I had to, you know.
Well, it's just creative stitching. It sometimes it's nonsensical stitching.
Yeah.
But one of my things with the Embroiderers Guild is I was home one day when the telephone rang, and I answered it, and they said, "This is the Embroiderers Guild, and we're trying to locate three people in the state that will do a stocking for the White House." So it was President Clinton was in, and the theme of the stocking was the Nutcracker. And so I went over to Sarah Johnson's, and I said, "Sarah, I know you have a lot of nutcrackers. Can I look at your nutcrackers?" And she said, "Sure. Come over to my house one day, and I'll show you all my nutcrackers." And so I took two or three home, and I looked at them, and I thought, oh, nutcrackers can be all kinds of things. So I took my stocking, and I made the nutcracker be the total item on the stocking. So the head was way up here, and the bottom was down here on the heel, and then the feet were up there at the toes. And I stitched it and designed it and sent it in. And then when it got to Washington, D.C., and whoever was setting up the tree, they saw one stocking that not only had a little mouse or a tree or a little tiny nutcracker, one that had a full nutcracker on the whole stocking. And they put it over there, and they said to Mrs. Clinton, "Point at that one when you say the tree, the nutcracker tree." So my tree, my stocking got to be the important one on the tree for no other reason than just a full nutcracker.
That's great. That's amazing. We're in the studio with Nancy Pardue, and among the many activities that you're involved in is quilting. And you're mostly an embroiderer, but you're very much involved in the quilting community here, right?
Yes. It's the Upper Cumberland Quilt Festival, and most people call it the Allgood Quilt Festival because it happens in Allgood, and it's a fundraiser for the Allgood Senior Center. So this year we had to postpone the quilt festival because of the COVID. But our plans are to have it next year, September 17, 18, 2021. And it's involved with the Trinity Church, the Allgood community, White Plains, And let's see, Keith Morrison, who's the city manager over in Allgood, is helps us out too. The city of Allgood helps. And it's all because the senior center, this is their major fundraiser. So we bring in 300 to 400 quilts. It doesn't cost any money to display a quilt. You might win a ribbon, but we have merchants there so that you can go and shop. And you can also buy a quilt. If you put a quilt on display and you want to sell it, you put a price on it. And then the committee adds 20%, which goes to the senior center if it sells. If it doesn't sell, you get it back. So that's kind of a wonderful way to come and enjoy seeing the quilts. And you can go on a tour. And the Upper Cumberland has a quilt tour area where you go from one house to the other house and you see the quilts that are out on the barns in the area. So it's kind of an all-encompassing festival.
It's wonderful. And I think quilting on some levels is really a wonderful art form that, like all art forms, I think, is somewhat autobiographical. So each of these pieces that come in on this quilt are contributed by an individual. And you're talking about the different communities that have these names that were once on their way to maybe being incorporated, but just retain the name based on where they are. So each of those people come in, they put a piece in this thing, and there's this great sort of collective autobiography, I think, in a way. The love is what's there, I think, that's most important.
Well, that's true. And White Plains has a great collection of quilts that was given to the university, and the university is passing it on because White Plains is on the National Historic Register. The Allgood Methodist Church, where we display the antique quilts, is on the National Historic Register. So it's really a great event, just publicizing Putnam County and what's happening over the years. And quilting was an important part of everybody's activity in life.
I agree, yeah. And do you add embroidery to quilts in addition to your more traditional embroidery projects, or no?
You mean me personally?
Yes.
I'm not a quilter.
But I'm asking, do people hand you quilts and say, and add some embroidery to this? Or no, that's not a traditional form of quilting, right?
You're wrong on that. It is.
Okay.
A lot of quilts were just done as in one sheet of fabric, and then they would embroider different patterns on it. That's called a whole cloth quilt.
Whole cloth quilt.
And they would just, sometimes it was little French knots. So that's called candle wicking, and they put enough knots in a pattern so that when you looked at it, you saw the pattern, and it was all knots instead of stitching up and down. So there's all different ways of embellishing a quilt. You can do it with squares and pieces of fabric. You can do it with a needle and thread. So there's different ways. Lately with my sewing, I've been involved with taking old quilts and making memory teddy bears. So I take an old quilt and I cut it all up and sew it all back together again and stuff it, and you have a teddy bear.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Reusing that material, you know. I think for many years there were people at the beginning of the 20th century, farmers, and people aren't aware of this, that they would get flour in a cloth bag and then turn that bag into a dress or an article of clothing for a child, which is wonderful.
Well, actually, you see a lot of quilts that are made out of flour sacks.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
they were quite beautiful, right? It's really amazing to think that this sort of ordinary white powder is put into this cloth bag that's embellished with great color, I think, and great detail.
Well, I think the companies found an easy market for selling their flour and their sugar, because the women that went there, if they saw a blue flowered material and they bought enough flour, they had enough blue material to make
a
dress.
I didn't realize that. That's a great marketing strategy.
So it was marketing that got it into the flour sacks, got printed with fabric.
Yeah.
I mean, printed with prints that people wanted.
Yeah. I wonder which came first, the person buying the flour who saw the fabric and bought multiples, or did the flower industry say, let's make an assortment of colors that people might buy?
It's, you know, the chicken and the egg question.
It is. So we'll never know, I guess. But Well, and then you're going to continue making masks as it's needed, and we don't see right now that there's a need for homemade masks, if you will, because it seems like the retail industry is finally picking up. But you might be involved in that some more at some point, right?
Well, yes, because our mask is made out of American cotton material instead of coming in from China.
Yeah.
I'm not downing China. I don't mean to do that. But, I mean, we have all cotton material, and you should wash these masks. So after you wear it a day, you should wash them.
Yeah.
And so when it's all cotton, you can just throw it in the washing machine. And some of them are made with little pockets so that you can put a coffee filter inside of
there. I see. That's great. Yeah.
And some of them have little wires to go over the nose. They're made all different ways, just depending on what people wanted.
Nancy Pardue, it's been great having you. I hope you'll come back. Thanks for visiting us today.
Thank you for having me.